Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And we are welcoming to Maltin on Movies this week a man whose name is formidable, both in film history and in film going.
I don't think Greg is that formidable a name. It's a nice name, but I don't know that that's my... Oh, your last name.
Yeah,
right.
That one.
Right.
Our guest is Greg Lemley. Now, the name Lemley, L-A-E-M-M-L-E, is familiar to anybody who knows anything about movie history, Hollywood history in particular,
yeah.
Because Uncle, as he was called, Uncle Carl Lemley, founded Universal Pictures.
No big deal. And then if you live around here, we're in Los Angeles, and you want to see any good movie, you must go to a Lemley theater, because that is where the good movies live. And it's our favorite, honestly, it's our favorite movie theater to go to, any of them, because there's a number of them. But it's because they are truly, the people who work there are generally movie nerds. Yeah. And everybody going there to see a movie is generally a movie nerd. And you see the most, interesting stuff. You see tiny documentaries, all sorts. And we're very, very lucky to have them.
So welcome, Greg.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
And you are now the cameras. I was going to say the tables have been turned, but the cameras have been turned on you, because you and your family are the subject of a really good documentary called Only in Theaters. And how would you describe it?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a film that was a, you know, started out as a documentary about a 80-year-old family business that was started by, you know, two immigrant brothers in Los Angeles, and, you know, how that became part of the fabric of the city of LA.
Yeah.
And yet then morphed into something, because we then experienced two of the more difficult years in our family's history. You know, first confronting a question of whether we would, you know, sell the family business, and then having decided not to sell, then confronted with 13 months of closure because of COVID. You know, the cameras were along for the ride, and nobody knew that that was going to be the journey as we started it.
That, you know, the thing about documentaries, and I would say collectively we've seen a few, is that those moments happen. And it's the kind of stuff you can't write. How could you, how could any of us come up with COVID? But, you know, it was really, we realized at a certain point, my dad actually, the last theater he was in before the end times hit was one of yours.
Yep, we were at the Town and Country, Alice and I, seeing a obscure German film that Kenny Turan had just recommended in the LA Times on Friday, March 12th.
It would have been the 13th.
Yeah, 12th.
Because of your anniversary.
Yeah.
So the 13th, you were in Encino, in that theater, and then the world ended. But, yeah. So that's, but Lemley was the last theater you were in.
Yeah.
Which is insane, but I can't imagine, I can't imagine any of it, but what a...
Well, we can all imagine it. We lived it.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the film at some level is a shared experience. I mean, everybody went through that.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway.
No, but it's, I mean, that's the thing. Movie theaters are, in general, it's a difficult business. It is something where there's constant turnover. You know, you have to decide what you want to show. You have to figure out how many screens something needs. How long will it play for? It's all sort of a guessing game. And, you know, will this do well? In theory, it could, or it could not, or something could get vast behind it. I always bring up, because you have things like Parasite, you know, or this year,
everything, you know, everything,
with everything, everywhere, all at once,
yeah,
which is the epitome of a Lemley movie.
Yeah.
You know,
well, it's definitely a feast or famine business. And there are times when I like to refer to, or would refer to us, you know, exhibitors as farmers.
Yeah.
Because we're not entirely in control of, you know, the process. We're not making the movies. We're not, you know, we're not setting the release schedule. And there are periods where the fields are fallow.
Yeah.
There's nothing, you know, not that there's nothing to show. There's always something to show, but there may not be something that the public really is excited to come out and see.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just have to, you know, again, you know, get through those periods.
All right. So for you growing up, at what point did you realize what your family did? And at what point did you say, no, I'm not going to run the other direction. I figure I'll hang out here.
I have to imagine that I always knew what my family did, because, you know, no one else got free popcorn when we went to the movie. You know, everyone else had to wait in line at the concession stand, and all of a sudden I'm standing there and my dad just walks behind the concession stand and
gets, oh, that's so funny.
Gets the popcorn for us. And I did work in the movie theaters. You know, it's a great high school job, and what it was for me, starting, you know, relatively young, changing the marquee and then, you know, just working there through high school. When I went off to college, I did not necessarily think that I was, you know, going to be running the movie theaters. I studied marine biology.
Really?
Yeah. Go off with Jacques Cousteau on Calypso and, you know.
I love it. Where did you go to school?
See the ocean. This was at UC Berkeley.
Sure.
And fortunately, my father, you know, as I was leaving, arranged with the people who ran the UC theater, you know, to give me a pass. At that time, this was, you know, still, you know, VHS was coming into play. But, you know, there was still a vibrant repertory, circuit. And the UC theater was, you know, at the forefront of that with, you know, three or four different programs a week of double bills. And I saw a lot of movies, and I fell in love with, you know, the movies. You know, not that I hadn't enjoyed going to the movies before that, but probably, you know, that was my education in terms of a history of movie going.
Was that when Gary Meyer was programming?
That's when Gary was programming the UC theater, and, you know, and the theater would be, you know, an 1100 seat auditorium would be sold out for a screening of 8.5. Mm-hmm. And if you went to see The Graduate, which they showed probably two or three times a year, it would be packed, and, you know, everybody's singing along and, you know, having that, you know, interactive experience. So, I mean, it was really a way to catch up in a non-academic format with, the history of cinema, from great Hollywood films to the great art films, you know, silence, you name it. Right up through, you know, contemporary stuff or reasonably contemporary film that I may not have caught up and see it in a theatrical environment. So I can tell you, you know, there was a requirement. I still have my degree in marine biology.
Just in case.
No. Well, that's the only thing I had the prerequisites for by the time I, you know, but, you know, one of the requirements was that you had to spend a semester at a marine lab. And, you know, and my fellow students are, you know, I'm going to spend 6 months on a Russian fishing trawler and I'm going to the Sea of Cortez to count, you know, sharks and these kinds of things. And I was like, well, I'm going to Santa Cruz because that's the only place that's close to an art house. So.
There's a lot of marine life.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of marine life there.
One of the poignant aspects of this documentary, and it's a very personal, very candid documentary that Raphael Sparge made and did a wonderful job with it, I think, And I say that in spite of the fact that I'm one of the talking heads.
Yeah, you're in it. So there is that.
I did not make the film. I didn't write it, didn't produce it, not releasing it. Don't get a plug nickel from its its revenue.
Maybe you'll get free popcorn. Maybe if you sweet talk Greg.
Yeah. But that it really is also a portrait of your family. And the fact that it was not necessarily destined for you to be, you know, the new leader of Family Theater Chain. It was a choice, and a tough choice, that you had to make. Would you talk a little about that, and then also talk a little about your family?
Yeah, well, I, the business was started by my grandfather and his brother. And, you know, they built it up from starting in 1938, you know, to the time the TV came into play in the late 40s. And, you know, they had to go through their own challenge because the introduction of television did hit the movie industry, you know, at that time. And, you know, the chain went from six theaters to one theater. And one of the brothers, you know, had to leave the business. You know, those are the kinds of tough choices that are made. You know, we didn't, because the film morphed into something else, we didn't deal with, you know, the challenges that my father had, both, you know, in deciding would he come into the business, building the business, you know, and sustaining it as a family business, you know, at a time when Cineplex Odeon was buying, you know, art house circuits around the country. You know, why did he say no? You know, to even give me that opportunity to decide, is it something I want to do or not want to do? Is this the right thing for me? So, you know, there aren't a lot of three generation family businesses out there, whether it's the movie business or whatever it might be. And, you know, these are things that may have been, you know, dealt with in a different film had it not been for, you know, again, the existential challenges that that came up during the course of the filming. You know, I think it's, you know, look, it just because it's movies, it's still a family business. And, you know, and as I'm sure you two can, you know, relate, sometimes working with a parent, you know, is a choice. Working with a child is a choice. I want to defend both of you.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
And you know, and how we, you know, find a way to make that work. But for thousands of years, that was the normative kind of business.
Yeah, you know? Sure. Absolutely.
And people did find ways to make it work.
Well, this, I mean, look, growing up here, it's funny that you say, you know, about like your dad went back and got popcorn. It's similar because everyone that you're around is somehow involved in film. And so it feels...
Or television.
You know, something in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
It feels normal. And you don't... I don't know, for you, I didn't start to understand how cool certain things were until I was a little bit older and went, oh, everybody doesn't get to do this. You know, oh, this is not what everyone in the universe does just because every person I'm growing up with does.
Right.
And something that I know you understand is that that's when sort of the family pride comes in and you go, okay, I want to be a part of this because I'm very proud of my family. And I want to keep it going. And I want this to be something that lives because it matters to me much more deeply than something else could.
Yeah. Look, it's a challenge. I mean, you know, you're in a family or a small business, which typically will be a family business. And, you know, what can we learn from the corporate businesses, you know, that, you know, surround us? And are there things that we should be learning from them and you know, and following and, you know, incorporating into our practices? Or are there things that, you know, the idiosyncrasies of small business are what make them so special, and we need to embrace that. So, yeah, that's...
We joke that when you email...
But again, I think whether you're familiar with the entertainment business or whatever business exists in your community, community is known for, again, it's all just... You know, it's just business, and a lot of it applies, whether it's, you know, Lemley Theatre's, you know, showing movies in Hollywood, which potentially influence, you know, the artistic choices of Hollywood movies, or it's, you know, Joe's Pizza, down the street trying to compete with Domino's.
Yeah, absolutely.
You talk about getting free popcorn as a kid. A friend of mine said, okay, so you get to go to the movies for free, he said to me. But my uncle is in the furniture business.
Yeah.
And I get a great discount.
On couches.
On couches.
Yes.
So,
no, how many couches are you going to buy? You can go to the movie every week. No question who wins on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is funny. Again, it's your life. It's whatever it is that is normal to you. And then you find out, as I say, that it's not necessarily normal.
Right. Well, I think the beauty of, again, not the filmmaker and not the producer. I saw the film when it premiered to the public at the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And but I think the beauty of the film is that it really does. I think it does show some of the universal truths about a family business, mm-hmm. Running it, being a part of it, being part of that legacy that I think anybody can, hopefully anybody can relate to. Because whether they've, there's probably a family business in their background at some level.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I think surprised you to some degree was the fierce loyalty that your customers here in LA have for your theaters. This is not just a passing whim. Oh, let's go to the Lemley, the West Side, or the NoHo 7, or the one in Fallbrook, or wherever it may be. But people really care about your theaters. And that's due in part to what Bessie said before, your staff, the people who work for you, they're really dedicated.
And some hilarious merch. Some truly hilarious. When you guys first started doing the shirts, if you can read this shirt, you can read subtitles. One of my favorite things that you've ever done. Kills me.
There's a certain attitude, I guess, that comes, with the territory, with working for the company, or a certain allowance. We give people a lot of rope. Look, there's definitely a passionate fan base. And just for that period of time, short period of time, there was still a question. Was it enough to sustain a business?
Yeah.
During a time when, look, I always believed that when we had that slowdown, it was about the films. And we just had an extended period of time when, for whatever reason, it's not that there weren't good films being released, but they were not films that were drawing an adequate level of ticket attendance. And yet in the background, there's this whole conversation. No, this is about streaming. This is a sea change in our business. I never bought into that. I did not consider it was a sea change. And as soon as there was, just a glimmer of hope from a few films and release that started attracting ticket buyers again, that we decided not to sell. And I'm still happy with that decision. To this day. And hopefully the moviegoers of Los Angeles will be happy with it as well. Look, we're still in a post-pandemic.
Yes.
Not even sure if we're in a post-pandemic phase.
No, we're not quite post yet.
Yeah, we're not. And I say that we've been open for 2 years.
Yeah.
And we're still not back, but I'd like to think that because of some of the things that happened after the film wrapped, and most of that's about funds that we finally received from the Shuttered Venue Operator Grant Program, which we only received in June or July of 2021, so after we'd reopened. And we're still, trying to get through an audit on those funds. But I believe that those will provide us with the stability and the capital to get through this year and even into 2024, and hopefully get to a post-pandemic phase where people are finally really, truly comfortable returning to movie theaters.
Yeah.
When the LA Times runs a review, which is very infrequent these days, but when they do, they'll still include a warning about, is it safe to go into a movie theater? And that, creates, we can have a debate about the safety of seeing a movie in a movie theater. But, you know, it's obviously lending credence to the idea that, well, I'm not quite sure I'm ready to go back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And everybody is entitled to whatever it is that, you know, whatever makes you feel safe, whatever makes you feel good, that is what you should do. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm not here to dispute the decision to.
Of course, no. Of course not. Yeah. I think it's more so the idea that you want people to make their own decisions without someone sort of telling them, be afraid.
Right. You want to be able to make that decision without fear, without concern, you know, and just get back into the habit of seeing movies, because so many people, you know, they were, you know, we'd like to say that, you know, Lemley movie, you know, the average moviegoer saw 3 or 4 movies a year. Lemley moviegoers were seeing 3 or 4 movies a month.
Absolutely.
Sometimes 3 or 4 movies a week.
Yes. Well, one of my good friends who I've grown up with since I was little itty bitty swears by the Encino location. He loves that theater. He will go to that theater even during when you guys opened up and the pandemic was happening. He masked and he went to that theater because that is where, when he wanted to see something, that's where it was. And, you know, we joke because it's true. You know, at least once a week he goes, oh, me and my dad are going to, you know, we're going to go see this. We're going to go see that. And there too, because the theaters have been around so long in the way that they have, they are very much a part of people's routine. So, hey, we're going to go see this. You know, my parents, that's one of the, you know, we're going to Lemley. We're going to go. You were just there the other day.
Yep.
To see John Sheinfeld's new film.
That Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
The new doc about Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yep.
You were there last week. With a very excited audience, you know, to support that movie. So, you know, for a lot of us, it's that. The only reason I can't go to a theater is because I have a small human who won't let me. But, you know, even that, my husband and I, prior to having a person, you know, once a week at least, we love going to the theater. It's mm-hmm. one of our favorite things to do as a date, as an activity.
It's a great activity.
And yeah, we recently
get back into it.
We recently interviewed two guys you know well, Michael Barker and Tom Bernard, run Sony Pictures Classics. And they, like you, have stood firm in their belief in movie theaters and the act of movie going. And they're not ready to run a white flag up, surrender, not in the slightest. You have at least one aggressive, successful distributor.
I think we've seen, you know, right now, I mean, we're seeing what's happened with the streaming experiment. And, you know, if anything, the narrative now is streaming, taking movies, or at least, you know, well, what we would define as a movie, straight to streaming is not a smart economic choice. Mm-mm. It does not work. And you enhance the value of a movie by releasing it first in movie theaters and creating that awareness. And, you know, we've just got to get, you know, well, I think all the studios are pretty much on board with that.
Yeah.
But yes, the art house audience is a little slow to return. And that's not about streaming. I think that's about some other things. The way in which people found out about what films were out there is a little broken.
Oh, it's so, look, we talk about this because my mom still gets her LA Times delivered. And when I was growing up, one of my favorite things to do on a Friday into Saturday was take out the calendar section, you know, take out the calendar section. The first thing I had to do was look and see if my dad was quoted anywhere. That was part one. Is daddy quoted anywhere in the paper? Okay, let's see if we can find one. And then see all of our other friends who are quote, oh, there's Pete, there's so-and-so. Okay, neat. They said they like this movie. And we look, all right, let's look at Universal. What are they showing right now? Okay. And what are they showing in Burbank? All right. And we look through, and it was this wonderful physical activity.
Yeah.
And it's something that I really loved and obviously didn't think about, because until it's, you know, until it's gone, you don't do that. But when it then became, we'll go online. Okay, I don't mind going online. But there was just something about the paper with my parents looking through, what do we want to see? That looks like fun. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think, the internet is great because if you are looking for something specific,
yeah,
you find it. And you know, search engines help guide you to it, or do or don't, but we can have, that's a topic for another day.
Thing, yeah.
But the process of discovery when you opened the paper, you know, and you started looking through it, and you would find something that you weren't looking for.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe some, and you would start reading the review, and all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I didn't know about this Romanian film. I've never heard of a film from Romania, but wow, this is a great review. Maybe I should check this out.
Well, it's the exact same thing as a bookstore. This is why, for the, you know, what's so wonderful about a bookstore? You walk around, you go, oh, I didn't, that sounds really interesting. Oh, I hadn't heard that came out. You know, that's the joy of it.
Yeah.
Well, and you see, yeah, you see things that some computer didn't tell you, you know, should be put in front of your eyeballs. And if you're just looking through, you know, what's on your streaming service, you know, it's just not going to be shown to you. You know, there are things that won't get shown to you.
Mm-mm. Right. Greg, let's go back to fundamentals here for a little bit. What do you think is the biggest audience misconception about your job running a movie theater?
Well, I think people think that I see movies all day. I don't know that people really understand, you know, what happens with that dollar that they spend, or the, you know, for a ticket, and you know, and all kinds of other question marks about the movie going experience. Although, you know, look, there's a lot of information out there.
Let's talk about booking film.
Yeah.
How do you go about booking what seems to you to be a potential hit in the art film category, that arena?
So first, the film is owned by in theory, it's owned by a producer somewhere along the way. And in many cases, that producer will enter into an agreement with a distributor. Obviously, the studios produce and distribute their own films, but companies like Neon or A24 in many cases are acquiring films that they did not produce for distribution. The distributor then determines when is the film going to be released, the pattern in which it's going to be released, and which theaters they want to play. So no, I don't get to just decide I'm going to play X, Y, or Z. I have to license the film from the distributor. And they may not want to play that film at any particular location. Sometimes there can be competition between locations. These are called clearances, where one movie theater will not play the same film that's playing at another movie theater. That's a somewhat archaic thing now in this day and age, but
isn't there a mileage thing?
It still exists.
Yeah.
Talk about the mileage, because that when I learned about that, I was
there's no rhyme or reason. There's no rule that says, oh, a clearance is when a theater is so far from another theater. It's just up to the theaters to decide.
Yeah.
So you can have theaters that are across the street from each other that decide to play the same movies. And you can have theaters that are 10 miles apart that say, no, we don't play the same movies. And clearances aren't mutual. You know, one theater chain can say, we've decided there's a clearance, even if the other theater doesn't believe that there should be. And you know, it's up to distributors to decide whether they're going to accept that clearance or not. And naturally, you know, in many cases, it's not a symmetrical relationship. It's a larger circuit claiming a clearance over a smaller theater.
Yeah.
And we've been the victim of those kinds of things in many circumstances where a larger theater nearby would claim clearance over our theater, and therefore there were certain films that we weren't able to play. But these are all the factors that come into play in terms of deciding whether we're going to play a film or not. And even then, you know, also how many weeks are we committing to play in many cases?
That was my next question.
Yeah.
So there may be a requirement that, well, if you're going to play this film at this location, it's a 2-week film, or it's a 3-week film, or it's a 4-week film. And what are the terms? And, you know, if we commit to playing something for 4 weeks and it's not our highest grossing film or one of the higher grossing films, well, when we need to open new films, sorry, you committed to playing this for 4 weeks. You're playing it for 4 weeks. Most recently, Super Mario was a 4-week commitment.
Yeah.
And obviously, in many locations that was worth, it's going to be worth the 4 weeks, but in some locations it wouldn't have been. And there are some theaters where we passed on playing the film, maybe to our detriment, but just because we couldn't necessarily see, our way clear to committing to that 4-week release pattern requirement. So
there's it's an understatement to say there's so much people don't know about, but it is fascinating. And it is a business.
Yeah.
And that is, as they say, when I first learned about the mileage situation, they said, oh no, they've said that since, AMC, whatever, AMC Universal is there and Lemley in North Hollywood is there. Well, that's not far enough. That's whatever it is, 3 miles, 2 miles. They're too close together. And so you can't show such and such. And I went, that's a thing. Yeah. How is that a thing?
That was a thing, and it's never assumed. It's always a risk when we're opening a new theater, or at least at that time. Would there be clearances or not, and how would that impact our ability to, to find film to play?
So many details.
Well, actually, I think the other misconception or thing that people don't know about the business is how visible grosses are.
Yes.
It's not just that we report our box office report figures to the distributor of the film in question, but we report all our grosses, to, if not a publicly available source, certainly something that is open.
Right.
And everyone, so the competition generally knows how much not only their film, other people's films are doing.
Right.
That becomes important because every week, generally speaking, we come in on Monday and have a discussion about which films are holding over, that is getting extended for another week, and which films are ending so that we can open the next batch of films. And, and distributors will say, well, what do you mean? You're holding that other film that's doing less business than my film. You can't do that. or I'm doing X amount of business and that film that you're talking about opening is not going to do that much business or may not do that much business. So it's, that becomes a real challenge. Also, there are policies that the studios, may require where you have to play, my film needs to play for 3 shows a day, even though it maybe only needs 2 shows a day. Would that be an opportunity to, hold over an art film or at least, a show? Sometimes you can't do that as much as you might want to. And so, I think, when the public says, oh, that film only lasted for a week, I wish it had played longer. I meant to go out and see it, but I didn't. And it's like, well, if you're not there opening weekend in some cases, or let me rephrase that. When you come and buy a ticket to a movie on opening weekend, you're
dictating
the decision about whether that film is going to get an extended run.
Right. Yeah.
Because based on the grosses from that weekend, we may say, not only do we want to extend the film, but we can because it did more business than something else. And then I can say to a studio, which may have more leverage, than the smaller company releasing a certain film, they outgross you. They get to hold, you don't hold. But when people aren't there opening weekend, no matter how much they want to, they might want to eventually come see that film, they're not going to have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's where the review comes into play.
Yes.
Because when that review doesn't appear in the Friday paper, people don't know about it. And then they're not seeing it on the weekend. And, we're seeing now sometimes finally they'll run a review, but they might not run it till, Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
The film's ending on Thursday.
Right.
it's kind of moot at that point in many cases.
Wild. I'm sorry. It's just wild, the detail and the specifics of it all and how much of an effect people have. I hate that now sort of the everyman is aware of box office numbers, because the idea to me, like, when someone says, Super Mario Brothers made 378 gabillion, whatever it is, my question is, did people like it? And it's like, and I think in general they have, but just as a general comment, it's like, just because a movie makes X amount of money, that's not the part that I care about. I want to hear, did you like it?
Yeah.
Because sure, when, you know, a Marvel film or whatever, any of those big guys come out, they're going to have huge numbers because people want to see them. But I want the other part of that.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me the way they talk about the numbers as if that's the same as people liking it.
Yeah, no, that it becomes a kind of echo chamber. And, you know, also, if something isn't the number one film, does that mean it's not worthy? I mean, and we see that this past weekend, where now the conversation about Air,
yes,
you know, as well, it only did X. And it's like, that's a lot of money, you know, for that film. And the reviews have been terrific, and it's a really good film. And, you know, and hopefully word of mouth will, you know, now it certainly did plenty of business, but you know, if all we're talking about is the numbers, it becomes very difficult.
Yeah.
You know, especially for, because you've got a film that's playing in one theater, you know, competing with something that may be played in thousands of theaters.
Yeah.
Now, do you sometimes let your emotions overrule your business sense? If there's a film that you care about or someone on your staff really, really is pulling for, and that has definite potential to build that word of mouth.
Well, there have been situations. I mean, and that's, yes, there have been situations where I you know, give a film a second week, you know, because I love it, because I think it could build. But I have to, you know, have those opportunities and those situations to, you know, to provide that room. And at some theaters, that's going to be at some certain like locations, that's going to be possible. At other locations, I don't have that flexibility.
Mm.
And you know, and that's where following a certain location, or having a favorite theater, or being open to going to a different location. I mean, you may want to go to, you know, the North Hollywood Theater, for instance, because it's close and convenient, but that theater is going to have a faster turnover of film potentially. Whereas at Glendale, you know, I might be able to extend the run. So, you know, can you extend your reach and say, well, I missed it at this theater, but it's still playing.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to Glendale. I'm going to go to West LA, you know, and find an opportunity to see it. You know, and just understand the full array of movie theaters that are available to you, and the full array of showtimes. Because sometimes if I'm trying to extend a film for another week, I'm not going to be able to play it on Friday and Saturday night, you know, at 7 p.m., but it will have a showtime at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So go see an afternoon show instead of a, you know, an evening show.
Yeah. Well, that's the marketing of everything. Obviously, we live in a time where everything is changing constantly, and how people go about marketing, where are people going to see something? You know, mm-hmm. if you don't have the calendar section anymore, and we don't, you know,
what are you going to get? If you don't have a calendar section anymore,
right? Yeah, but no, that's the thing. So what do they do? Well, it fascinates me to see how they use different forms of social media and whatever else. So you have a movie like Barbie that is not coming out for several months, but they have just launched this thing. Have you seen it everywhere?
Yes.
So what you can do is you take a picture with the Barbie sort of background. It makes you look like you're the poster, and it comes up with a cute little tagline, or you can put the tagline in yourself. Well, absolutely everyone is doing it. Famous people and normal human beings. Like, everyone is doing it. So this movie that's a Greta Gerwig movie, you know, it's an indie in that sense. Like, it's not a big expense, you know, and yet they figured out a way. I mean, Barbie is not hard to market in that sense. We all know the name, but they figured out something to do. Now, my only question is, why are they doing it this early? Because if the film's not opening till July, I think it's July that it's opening, is having this thing go viral in April worthwhile?
Yes. Yeah.
Awareness.
You want to build up awareness and anticipation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm just saying, it's that kind of thing.
Then it's the number one film, and that becomes part of the conversation, and it's bigger than any, you know, X, Y, or Z. And, you know, and now it's breaking out beyond just, you know, a smaller target audience, perhaps, to a broader audience.
Yeah. Well, and if something goes viral, then it can get covered on the news. That's the other thing. It goes viral. It gets covered on the news. And suddenly people who maybe don't use this, like you're not on social media very much. You have your platforms, but you don't use them a ton. Well, you might be watching the 10 o'clock news or you might be watching it in the morning and suddenly they go, oh, this Barbie thing has gone viral. You take a photo.
Whereas, you know, some small French film is probably not going to be able to do
that. No.
You have the advantage, the one advantage you definitely have over some of the big boys in this field, that you sort of know your demographic at each of your locations, because you're in one greater metropolitan area, for lack of a better definition, and that's got to be a huge advantage to knowing how to book which films where, how long to sit with them, how they're going to play out, and how long it's going to take.
I mean, yes, there is some historical data to support, you know, certain types of films will play better in one location versus another. And we, you know, program to the strength of that venue. But again, you know, the closure kind of disrupted our connection with that core audience, and you know, reestablishing it is taking some time, and especially reestablishing it at a period where, you know, the audience has been, you know, disrupted, continuously disrupted. I mean, it's not like, you know, in April of 2021, all of a sudden everything was hunky dory. We had a period of time where we were getting people back, and then all of a sudden the Delta wave came, and, you know, and that scared people back, you know, into their homes. And then in the fall of 2021, again, numbers back down. Okay, it's time to come back out. And then we have the Omicron wave. So I think people have been, you know, hit with so many different kinds of things, whether it's COVID or whether it's, you know, just fear about leaving your house, fear about dealing with, you know, what you will see on the street on your way to the movie theater, that, you know, we need to get a little bit of calm and normalcy back into our lives. You know, I'm still finding people 2 years after reopening, we're still getting people who are saying, this is my first time back in a movie theater. And we're going to get that for, you know, probably for another year or two. But I think when people come back, they remember how much they enjoyed it, how pleasant an experience is, and hopefully that, you know, rekindles in them a desire to return to the experience.
What determines what kind of refreshments you sell at different theaters?
Well, you know, I'm not a restaurateur. I know for a while it was a hot thing to have dine-in movie theaters. I can't think of anything less appealing to me than eating a meal. I can't think of anything. Well, first, I can't think of anything less appealing than having to deal with someone, you know, scraping their plate and having a waiter come into the auditorium while I'm trying to watch a movie. But the second least appealing thing would be having a meal made for me by someone who really just should be picking movies. So I like to watch a movie and then we'll go out for dinner and I can focus on the meal. You know, it's a concession stand, traditional movie theater fare. Beer and wine has been added in many locations and is quite popular. So I'm happy to, and I think it goes very well, pairs very well with popcorn.
Yes.
Everything pairs with popcorn.
Everything pairs with, well, some well, of the almost, red wines yeah. maybe aren't so great with popcorn. I would go with white wine, you know.
That should be the next thing you do.
Red wine with chocolate is just fine. Red wine with chocolate is a good one.
It's a standard.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk popcorn for a minute.
Buttered.
Real butter.
Yes, absolutely. I think that should have been the name of the movie, frankly. You know,
real butter?
Would you like butter with it?
My husband is very particular about his popcorn, as I think many people are. And we got to interview George R.R. Martin. We went to his little theater in Santa Fe, New Mexico. As much as he enjoyed talking about his work, really enjoyed talking about popcorn, and how many flavors and seasonings they have in his theater. I think probably we spent 40 minutes talking about his TV and what, you know, books and everything. And then the rest of it was him talking in detail about the popcorn. And then when we finished the interview, we then had to go have the popcorn because he wanted to make sure we understood the intricacies of the popcorn.
Yep.
Now,
far be it for me.
How much training is required to get to operate a popcorn popper properly?
Is this what you think about at night?
Yes.
Is this what keeps you up at night?
It is.
Okay.
I think we could get you up to speed in half an hour.
Okay.
That's a professional talking.
Yeah.
I know you've done many things in this business, Leonard, but I don't know if you've actually been behind the concession stand operating
Nope.
I know for a fact he has not.
On a bit, but
he has not.
We might have to rectify that somehow.
Yeah. That's on the bucket list now.
There you go. Yeah.
Automatically goes on the bucket
list. He'll spend the day and everyone will complain because he got it wrong. But hey, it's the thought that counts.
My movie's starting quick. Get me my popcorn.
Honestly.
I swear there's one chain that no longer really in business, but I swear never hired type A.
Oh, well,
kids.
We can
behind the professional.
It rhymes
stand.
With Schmarklight, and hands down, the work. Bless them. They were generally very nice, but you would stand there. My husband and I would have to plan ahead. If the movie started at 5, we'd have to get there at 4:30 if he wanted popcorn because they took the longest. It was comical how terrible they were at serving anything. And we just kept thinking, really, guys? Every location?
They have this huge clock.
Yeah, that you just watch.
And reminding you how close you're getting to showtime.
As I swear, they were putting one ice cube in at a time.
Well, I love my employees may lack tact, but they're movie lovers and they understand getting you to the auditorium. And
yeah,
that's right.
I will say that.
How long, do you remember how long ago you guys met?
Well, I met your dad, Bob Lemley, first, because he used to go to Telluride
mm-hmm.
every year. And we would meet at the airport as we were gathering for the charter flight to the Telluride Film Festival. And we always had an interesting conversation, and that goes back a while. That goes back quite a while.
Yeah, indeed.
And the portrait of your family is also very, very touching and very moving. And now I'm going to get it wrong. Is it your grandmother who
Elise Lemley is featured in the film at 103.
Yeah.
And she was married to my grandfather's brother.
Okay.
So her husband, they both worked at one point for Universal, both my grandfather Max and his brother Kurt. Kurt then left Universal to run a movie theater in Lowell, Indiana. And it's in the Midwest where he met his wife, who was in the Chicago area. This was in 1935, and Kurt wrote to Max, who was in Paris at the time, and, you know, we still have a copy of the letter on the letterhead of the Ritz Theater in Lowell, Indiana, and they discussed the idea that Europe was no longer safe for a Jewish family, that they needed to get their parents out of Germany, and that they should go into business together in the United States. And it took 3 years, but eventually they, you know, settled on being in Los Angeles, operating movie theaters in Los Angeles, and opening those first two theaters in Highland Park.
Hmm.
Being able to talk to Elise and to, you know, get her insight into, those early days of the business, was particularly meaningful.
Yeah. Now, what relation was Max to Carl?
So Carl was a first cousin of Max and Kurt's father. So they are first cousins once removed.
Okay. Because, there's the famous Ogden Nash couplet about Uncle Carl Lemley has a very big family. And they all
worked at Universal.
And they all worked at Universal, absolutely. Including one guy who turned out to actually have talent, named William Wyler.
Yeah, he was a pretty good filmmaker.
funny.
Yeah.
Jeez, the history.
I think he tells the story about how he started and he was like in the print department or something. And he just kind of like, this is boring. And he wandered onto a set and he just says, you know, and started making movies. I mean, yep. You know, obviously there were a few steps in between, but.
Yeah. Man, what, if anything, what do you want people to take away from the doc? What do you hope they take away from?
Well, look, I hope that they take away from the doc that the opportunity to see a movie in a movie theater is really valuable. And that if we want to preserve a non-corporate, some opportunity for non-corporate independent films and foreign films to be seen, that we also need to support, you know, the movie theaters that show those types of films.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say every community in this country, but many communities in this country have a movie theater like the Lemley Theater. And, you know, we've all been impacted mm-hmm. By the closure and we could use your support because, you know, while some of us are going to be able to weather this storm, not everyone will, but any support that we can receive right now, if you're on the fence about going back to a movie theater, get thee back to the nunnery, you know, get back to the movie theater, find out if your local paper is not reviewing the films in the way that they did, figure out how to go onto your favorite theater's website. You don't have to be on Facebook. You don't have to be on social media.
Yeah.
But, you know, or just go by the theater. There's probably a flyer or a calendar. Right. Find a film and go see that movie. Go see our movie. but, you know, go see a movie because, you know, we may not be there. Now, you know, if that theater closes, hopefully something will, you know, rise up in its place. But for a lot of communities, you know, there's going to be a transitional period. Now, if we don't, you know, go out and support these theaters now. That's what the movie's a plea for. The theater where we're opening on Friday in Boston, the West Newton Cinemas, you know, has some existential challenges, and could use your support.
Yeah. Well, we will be airing this episode on Friday, April 14th. And so that is when it opens, correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
All right. And there is also a website.
Onlyintheaters.com.
Yep. And my dad clarified that it's theaters spelled the American way and not the British way. So PRS, not RES. And it really is, you know, I don't think you have to preach to the choir because we know how we all feel. And I think it's more so getting to folks who don't necessarily understand how vital it is. We've been lucky enough to go to the Art House Convergence several times, and I feel like it's a come to Jesus for all these small theater owners who just need someone else who understands how hard it is, what a difficult business it is. And so for them to see other people going, yeah, I just love this and that's why I do it, is really special.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the saying is don't preach to the choir, but you know, sometimes the people in the choir need a little inspiration. And,
sure.
And I think this is a sort of a sermon that hopefully inspires us to, you know, to be committed moviegoers.
Absolutely.
You're also, it must be said also that the Lemley Theater as a business, you're also good citizens.
Yeah.
I mean, you are. You're members of the community. You help nonprofit groups. You help charities. You stand up and take a role in what's happening in the life around your theaters, and that's to be commended. And it's also sets a good role model.
Yeah.
For others to follow.
Also, so many small movies have their premieres.
Yeah.
You know, they have their premieres at the theaters, the one on Wheelchair All the Time. I can't count how many friends' films I've seen there at this point. It's, like I say, it's very meaningful, and it's why everyone everywhere should try to find those small theaters and support them, because they need you. But also now that you have your own documentary, it's exciting. You can sort of peek behind the curtain and learn a bit more about that history, but also what's happening now.
So thank you again for your time, Greg.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. It's nice to see you.
Thank you for your support.
Of course.
And again, that website is onlyintheaters.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have a good run.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Thanks.
Hi, Greg.
If it wasn't apparent to you listeners, and I hope it was, Greg is a good guy.
Yeah.
Capital G, capital G. And he comes from a line of good people who really care about what they do. And that's part of why the documentary is sort of more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
And it's not just about business.
No. You know, again, anybody who works in a small business, whatever that small business is, if it's a restaurant, you know how hard it is to keep things going and the amount of work it takes and effort it takes. And, it is funny sometimes to think about films, movies as a business. And in terms of what he's talking about, figuring out the holdover, if you can, go to the opening weekend because it will help a smaller film, especially, it might mean that they extend the run. It is weird sometimes to think about it in those nuts and bolts kind of a way, but at the same time, it's just the reality. Go see this movie. And if you can't see it at a theater, that's okay too. And as I said before, if you're not comfortable in a theater yet, that's all right. You do whatever it is that feels good and safe for you. And this will be streaming. If you can't see it in a theater, go for it. Thank you guys, as always, for joining us. We really appreciate it. You can find me and this guy at Leonard Maltin, at Jesse Maltin on Twitter and Instagram. You're also on Facebook. You can go to our YouTube channel, which is Maltin on Movies, and leonardmaltin.com for movie reviews and book roundups and all kinds of good stuff. And lastly, but not leastly, the Patreon.
The Patreon.
The Maltreon.
That's patreon.com/Maltin on Movies, where you can help support what we do. And we can thank you in different ways.
And we appreciate it so much, as we say.
Yes,
so
we do.
Everybody be safe, be well, be healthy, and we will talk to you next week.
See you then.
Today's episode of Maltin on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.